Nantucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Text line, it would be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. That's what you got to do. You got to text me. Let me know what's on your mind. Coming up on the program today, Parker Griffith, the official Democrat response of the Jeff Poor Show. Big night for Democrats last night. Very excited to talk about this. I've been waiting for this, and you've been listening to me talk about this for a few years now, but I'm very encouraged, let's say, by the outcomes last night, the Mamdani sweep last night in New York State, or New York City, be specific. I hope there's more of this, and I'll explain that in just a moment. Also coming up on the program, Joy Clark, our Wednesday regular from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery. We do that every Wednesday. And then finally, we have not had him on. I know him fairly well. He is a regular columnist on 1819 News, but also a fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Alan Mendenhall will be with us in the 11 o'clock hour. And we'll kind of talk about, he had an interesting comment a few weeks ago. Do y'all remember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez coming to Alabama and wanting to, I think her intentions were say that we don't need to lose sight of Alabama and disregard it. It needs the goodness of our political movement. But some people have interpreted that as, so what's wrong with Alabama? But we'll get into his column coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, kind of talk about the state of affairs in American politics and in more general topical discussion. So make sure that you stick around for that. So last night, if you weren't paying attention, and I think some of you probably were not, it was a significant night for the Democrat Party, and I think something that's been, they've been holding back for a long time now. They have been keeping this internal skirmish at bay for, well, ever since probably Hillary Clinton's loss in 2008. Back then, I mean, that was sort of indicative of the Democratic Party. It was, I mean, it still is to some degree identity politics. But it was the first female president or the first African-American president. And what, you know, what were the major policy differences there? And then Hillary Clinton later becomes Secretary of State for the Obama presidency. You know, the history. But that was the last time Democrats really had a competitive national primary, a national discussion. The date, you know, and you know, go through the timeline here. Obama wins in 08. He's the incumbent in 2012. 2016 rolls around. It's Hillary Clinton's turn. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is the Democratic Party chairwoman. You remember from the WikiLeaks drop that she really just rigged the system for Hillary Clinton to win. I mean, we knew that. You could just tell that. But when the emails were leaked, that was indeed the case. So you got Hillary Clinton who loses to Donald Trump. 4 years later, 2020, Joe Biden. Well, that was supposed to be a competitive primary. And Joe Biden probably was, you know, they didn't really have Polly Market or Kalshi back then, but he would have been the favorite from the get-go. Former vice president under Obama. But it just wasn't that great. it wasn't that great of a campaign trail. He didn't really do well. He lost big in New Hampshire, and he lost big in Iowa. So, come around to the South Carolina Democratic primary. James Clyburn, one of the most powerful people in Democratic Party politics, turns it around for Biden. I also think that, like, the leader at the time may have been Pete Buttigieg, the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana. But the money dried up. The money dried up, and kind of in retrospect, you think about how this works. There was a lot of big money coming his way, and no one thought that he could win the Democratic Party primary, but he does, or he's on this path toward it. And then the way Democratic Party politics works is, you know, hey, stop giving him money. Well, why? We like him. Well, he can't beat Donald Trump. We need someone who can beat Donald Trump. We think that's Joe Biden. And, you know, deals are made and deals are cut. And then he drops out after South Carolina. My guess is there was a hard conversation. Hey, for the good of the country, we don't think Americans will elect a gay mayor to be president. You need to step aside. We'll take care of you. You'll get a cabinet position in the administration. Come back and play later. And he played along. And they thwarted what would have been probably a fight to the end for the Democratic Party nod. And you got Joe Biden. And you got Kamala Harris. Who Kamala Harris on paper should have been their gal. But in that 2020 cycle, she ran a horrible campaign. She had a big show, if you remember, when she launched in Oakland. But just didn't have the work ethic. When you run for president, it consumes your life. And I don't think she was willing to make that commitment. And we learned that to be the case later. More on that in a moment. Joe Biden goes on to win. But the party had picked him to be the nominee because they thought he was their best shot to beat Donald Trump. And they were probably right about that. Think they had to rig some of the elections, of course. But you had to get it within a margin of error. 2024, clearly Joe Biden is not in the state of mind to be president of the United States, is he? Well, he's set up. He goes, whatever reason, we do a midsummer debate. And he's exposed. And it's the Democratic Party structure says, hey, it's too late to really have a primary process. What we're going to do, everybody likes Kamala Harris, and she's the vice president. We'll just put her at the top of the ticket. And much like her 2020 campaign, it was terrible. Remember, it was like a month before she sat for an interview. She wasn't a great campaigner. Donald Trump was doing like 5 events a day. She was doing like 3 events a week. The Democratic Party set you guys up who are, you know, hardcore Democrats. But what was interesting, no one seemed to care. At least on the Democrat side. I mean, you screech about democracy, and only one on the November ballot in 2024 who had got a single primary vote was Donald Trump. Kamala Harris just was given it, granted it, okay? They didn't have a competitive primary in 2024 like they probably should have. Do you think they're going to get away with that in 28? I don't think so. The people who are delegates, I mean, like, those are the true party activists, the true believers. And this is true for Republicans, and it's also true for Democrats. They're the hardcore ideologues, typically. Now, some, I mean, on the Republican side, some of it's big businessy, Chamber of Commerce Republicans who have deep pockets who can run as a delegate or somehow get, you know, whatever system their state has in place to get to be a delegate to go hang out on the floor of the convention. There's some of that on the Democrat side for sure, but not as much as on the Republican side. The people who populate the Democratic Party are the true party activists. Got a little noise in my ear there. But they're the true party activists. And they're the real Democrat. I mean, they're the real believers. They're the real liberal ideologues. And they're going to want their person as the nominee of the Democratic Party. Do you think that's Gavin Newsom? I don't know. I mean, to like us as Republicans, and you're looking at Democrats, and you look at them, and they're all bad, they're all terrible, whatever. But like, take that out of it, and just start assessing these people who are named one by one by one by one, and look at them kind of, well, who's more liberal, who's more ideological. And then, you know, you got to put yourself in the shoes of a Democrat voter. I think that's where this goes. That they're going to have, now they got super delegates and a lot of different quirks to the Democratic Party system that Republicans don't. But they're going to have their fight. And it's going to be sort of the existing Democratic Party structure. Where you have like, and she's going to be gone, Nancy Pelosi, but she was really good at kind of shepherding money and the big whale donors of Democratic Party politics really listened to her, and she told them where to put their money and what to do, and she delivered on her promises to them. They don't have that anymore. Hakeem Jeffries clearly is in trouble because his back candidates lost last night. So I think New York City is sort of that first. It's the Paul Revere or it's the canary in the coal mine or whatever. It's coming. Because the Democratic Party for the last 10 years, since the inception of the Trump phenomenon, has been ginned up at this like very, very high level of emotion. And it's not that the emotion is, yeah, sure, you know, a lot of it's dedicated toward being anti-Donald Trump. There's still that emotion that steers people toward these socialist ideologies. And this is where this energy is going to go. It's going to become a reflection of the Democratic Party. It's radical. It's revolutionary. It's changing the system. The system's terrible. You have a Donald Trump. For like every action, there's an opposite reaction, and here comes this reaction. And this is the opposite reaction. The Democrats did this on their own. They created this environment. And now they're going to have to own it. It's going to be fascinating to watch, guys. They are going to have their own civil war, their own internal skirmishes. They've had it for both ways for too long, where big business just gave a nod to left-wing ideologies, but they got what they wanted from government. Now you're going to have this dynamic where they're not going to get everything they want. And how is that going to play out? We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Son, you don't have to fight to be a man. There's someone for everyone.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning, 251-343-0106. Price of crude oil Down to $70 a barrel, and it's continuing to drop here. So it's that's good news. Now Trump's getting a little antsy, expecting the price of gas to fall. Rhetorically, I guess, or true socially, if you call it rhetorically, is making overtures about the price needing to fall, and he doing this thing with the attacking the oil companies. I don't know. That's kind of Democratic Party stuff there. But the market will resolve this. The prices will come down. I'm telling you. There's a lot of our Democrat texters. Is Tucker a Democrat now? That from DI texter. Gene, please discuss the latest on your old boss, Tucker. Are y'all got y'all's talking points out today or something? I think Tucker said he wasn't a Republican. I don't think he's a this is not how this works, guys. If you say you're not a Republican, it doesn't mean you're automatically a Democrat. And that's like and you know that's like this intellectually dishonest point of view. You know that like there are other ways besides Republican and Democrat. That's what you do. He's left the Republican Party because they are, and I think this is true, there are a lot of forces in the Republican Party that are pro-war or pro-U.S. intervention. And that's a deal breaker for my old boss. And he's always kind of been that way. I mean, like the whole Tucker Carlson phenomenon, he's this libertarian, then he gets into Washington and he becomes kind of a neoconservative, fits the Republican mold that is acceptable for a CNN, writes magazine pieces, and then kind of breaks free of that, goes to MSNBC. He worked at MSNBC with Willie Geist, had a show, gets fired. Just didn't get the ratings. I can't imagine MSNBC viewers watching Tucker Carlson. Then fast forward, does some fill in for Fox, eventually becomes one of the biggest personalities that Fox News has ever had. But it really was kind of contingent on this idea. We had this like populist wave and the ushering in of Donald Trump. And he had this momentum. But that with the Ukraine war, his opposition to Ukraine, and he would have certainly been opposed had he been on air to this Iran, I think was just too much for the Murdoch family. I don't want to say, is it neoconservative or what it is, but certainly globalist. But my old take on Tucker right now is like he seems like a guy who's had these ideas for a long time, but he's always kind of held them back. And now he's got his own thing, and he's enabled by just a very big following to just say what he really thinks. Now, I think he's changed, but people's viewpoints can change. They can move. And you get the frustration here. You hear it when you listen to his monologues, when he talks about it. And I don't know this necessarily to be the case. So maybe where I part ways. But that Donald Trump has been co-opted by the neocons and is now neoconservative in the sense that he's willing to take strikes against Iran. I believe this to be the case, that the powers that be presented Donald Trump with this scenario. Like, look, Democrats are about to win in November. You have this short window to really do something to stop this threat of Iran. Now's your window. Maybe it was the Israelis, whoever it was, and he acted accordingly. And maybe it hasn't worked out like they thought it would. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
than I could chew. But through it all, when there was doubt,
like a rhinestone cowboy riding out on a horse in a star-spangled rodeo, like a rhinestone cowboy getting cards and letters from people I don't even know, and offers coming over.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Wednesday morning. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the show? All you got to do is hit me up on that text line, and I'll do my best to respond to whatever it is that is on your mind. So to come about an hour from now, Joey Clark from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, Alan Mendenhall. He's a fellow at the Heritage Foundation, also a columnist for us at 1819 News. So make sure you stick around for that. Joining us now, calling in from Marshall County today, but the official Democrat response of the Jeff Poor Show, Parker Griffith is with us. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. We're doing fine. It's a beautiful day up here in Marshall County, and that's cool, and sun's out. The corn is growing. And so anyway, we're doing well. And the political situation changes by the day and makes everything pretty interesting. Our economy up here, in spite of some higher prices for gas and fertilizer, diesel, seems to be doing pretty well. So anyway, we're pretty happy up here.
Well, what's a bigger deal to you, the National Ball Reflecting Pool, or what happened in New York City last night with those three congressional seats?
Well, I'll tell you, if the far right keeps pushing, you're going to get Democratic Socialists. Just like when the far left kept pushing, what did we get? We got the Tea Party. They disappeared. Then we get the far right Christian nationalists. It's America at its best. It swings swings way over here and then back and then swings. It's
my theory is a little different than yours, that this has been meaning to happen for a long time, like this war of ideas. And Democrats really haven't had that. They haven't had a competitive presidential primary since 2008 with Hillary and Obama. There's a faction in the party that's growing, and my guess is some of it is because of Trump. But you generate all this energy, and it's got to go somewhere. Who's going to prevail here? I mean, you don't have a Nancy Pelosi to kind of stand in the gap there to keep this from getting out of control. Hakeem Jeffries, all his candidates lost. They're in trouble. I mean, at least when I say they, the leadership that sort of runs the Democratic Party is losing its grip.
Oh, I'm telling you, Democratic leadership in D.C. is virtually non-existent. It's just weak. Pelosi's gone. Hoyer's gone. All the glue that was there that you could say were Democrats, they don't know who they are. AOC, she's been mute. We've got, we don't have any Democratic leadership. I think what's unifying a lot of people is healthcare. Even those with insurance are sick and tired of insurance companies. Even those of us who have good insurance, we're waiting 2 or 3 months to see a specialist. Hospitals are, and the doctors have given authority over to the insurance companies and the hospitals. So we don't have any advocate for patients. And I think it's frustrating, both Republicans and Democrats,
right.
A nonpartisan frustration. But you're right about Democratic leadership. But I don't know where the Republican leadership is.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think Republicans aren't going to do well. I mean, I think Democrats are going to do well. But, you know, 26 is sort of baked in. You got to look toward 28, a national election. You don't have an incumbent on the ballot. Which way is, well, we kind of have an idea which way Republicans are going, like a Marco Rubio or J.D. Vance or somebody. I have no idea what Democrats are going to do. And I don't have a sense. The direction of the party last night suggests to me that there's a radical element that's just dying to get out there and really have itself heard and be a part of the process. And Congressman, you've been to these Democrat national conventions. I mean, these aren't your, you know, hippy-dippy, trippy, you know, tree-hugger types. I mean, these are – some of these guys are pretty radical in their point of view. They really are true believers. They really like the idea about socialism and socialist democracy. I mean, I think that's just going to be the wave of the Democratic Party for the time being.
You know what, Jeff? I think it's going to be the wave of America. I think America is going to become much more European. We're looking at the soccer championships. The only nation without universal health care in that whole 100-plus group is America. I think our younger people are not towing the line on quote unquote free market, because they don't see the free market working. There's no free market in healthcare. There's no free market when we've got the big box stores that are put in every corner, grocery right. store, every,
well,
yeah, every.
Let's get back to healthcare real quick, because and you were in this for years.
Yeah.
But like, okay, so when the British decided to have their nationalized healthcare, on like Monday, you were, you know, going to the doctor and doing things, and then on Tuesday, everything is nationalized. What the problem with America is, they're trying to do it both ways. They're trying to have this intermediary health insurance industry. They're trying to keep that placated. It's a very powerful lobby in Washington. I think, you know, medical costs, doctors, I go to the doctor, talk about this all the time. It's like, well, we have to pay all these expenses. They just add up, you know.
Exactly.
It's not like we're getting rich off of this, but you have this middleman apparatus that's enabled by the government. And that's what's, I mean, like, the problem with America and getting to socialized medicine is eliminating that, and that is not probably, I don't think that's going to happen, to be honest.
Well, the insurance companies don't want it to happen, and the Affordable Care Act, the Obama Care, was basically an insurance bill. It did not accomplish what it was supposed to accomplish. Sooner or later, America is going to have to decide, should we insure Americans? Can we spend 20 years in Vietnam, 20 years in Afghanistan, spend billions of dollars, watch your president start a war, spend billions of dollars, and then say, well, I'm sorry, we can't afford your health care? It's not making any sense. And I think Mandani in New York touched that. He lit that fuse, and it makes perfect sense to people.
Well, there's a play for these insurance companies, and this is what they did with Obamacare. I mean, there's just something in the American DNA that's different from Western Europe. They will reject socialism. It was tried in the last century when socialism was really catching on in a lot of Europe. It's why the United States has always resisted it. And what happens is these insurance companies, they're smart. They know that socialism is like a red, scary thing, right? They play on that. And
sure,
I mean, like, you and I could talk about the merits of, you know, the free market versus the, you know, the sort of government centered thing. But like, the reality of it is, getting to that, that you think it's headed that direction, there may be a desire for it. But that impediment is not something that's just going to go away quietly. And that's why I just don't give it very good odds.
Well, here's the here's what's going on. Medicare is socialized medicine. TRICARE is socialized medicine. Blue Cross Blue Shield is single payer. 90% of the Alabama is Blue Cross Blue Shield. We've got a hospital monopoly in North Alabama. We've got one single entity that literally owns every operating room north of Cullman. It's already happening. It's the labeling and the uninformed and those who have not thought about it well, they don't realize it's already socialized medicine.
Let me ask you this then, because this is it. The problem with socialized medicine, you're right, and the single payer, you have one health insurance provider, you have consolidation. Are we just going to head toward a system here that is going to look like our public schools? And you'll just have it, and people will be able to go to the hospital, and maybe they'll have to pay into it or whatever, but it's going to be like public schools K-12. But then you're going to start seeing like a private industry pop up on the side here. Like private schools.
We're going to be more like the Australian system. You can switch from public to private if you've got the resources. The same is true with public education.
Right. Because that seems to be like the only way out of here, that if you want both, if you want the ability to determine are we just going to have, where you live, you're going to be zoned in a hospital district or a doctor district or something. that seems to be like the best way to organize it and do it just like we do the public schools. And if your public schools are terrible, you have the option to send your kids to private schools or you move. And that becomes like a feather in the cap for some places. Well, we have a really good hospital here. We have really good public medicine. Come live here. And it becomes that sort of thing like we have with education.
Well, think about the foot of the American Medical Association on the neck of nurse practitioners. Listen, I can find a lawyer in 30 seconds. It can take me 2 or 3 months to get an appointment to see a dermatologist or an orthopedic surgeon or whatever. The AMA is a huge union that restricts the training of physicians. It's ridiculous what we've allowed to happen, but I think things are changing. I talk to people all the time, and I say, well, who's your doctor? I think it's Dr. So-and-so, but I never see the doctor. I only see the nurse practitioner. Well, that's what's going to be happening. And the doctors are now working for hospitals. They're no longer single businesses like they at one time were. They're big groups. Huntsville Hospital owns the biggest cardiology group in North Alabama, owns the orthopedic group in North Alabama. We're inching our way toward big box medicine and trying to learn to live with it. But your point's well made as far as the analogy to public education.
I mean, that's how it feels to me. Like right now, you want to do this. I still think that getting past like the health insurers and all these middlemen and all the money there is probably a very, very high bar to clear. However, if you're going to do this, then the way you got to organize it somehow, it's got to be done in a way where if we're going to make healthcare like this compulsory thing or this thing that everybody's going to have access to, then it needs to be done in a way that is like geographically cogent.
Well, here's an example of what infuriates me. I have a friend She's in her mid-70s. She has cancer of the liver. She's on immunotherapy drugs. And to start her treatment, they suggested that she have an MRI every 60 days. But her insurance company will not pay for it. It has to be every 90 days. Now, that's ridiculous. They have to know whether their immunotherapy is working or not, or she's just, you know, she's on a bicycle with no chain. But she can't afford $500 or $600 for an MRI outside of her coverage. We need the Australian system or some similar system where you can opt out or opt into a government-paid system. I mean, we're talking health care, and we're talking an aging America. I mean, I think the fastest-growing group in America is 85 and over, percent-wise. That's why I think the New York guy really, really touched something there. He's a democratic socialist. If you don't know what a democratic socialist is, it sounds pretty good. It's not a whole lot different than what's going on now, except we're allowing consolidation,
right,
and domination by people who don't have any, don't answer to anybody.
Right. You have this sort of weird public-private thing going here, and you know, that never ends well. Hey, Congressman, we got to get out of here. I look forward to you coming back to the Republican Party again here very shortly. But thanks for hopping on this morning.
All right, man. Y'all take care.
All right. Parker Griffith, the official Democrat response to the Jeff Porter Show. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Is it any wonder
that he's been? Then he cried just south of Nashville, and he turned that car around. He said,
"This is where you get off, boy, because I'm going back to Alabama." As I stepped out of that Cadillac, I said, "Mister, many thanks." He said, "You don't have to call me Mister, Mister. The whole world."
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. They should be with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line, if you need to be in touch with me, your show host, the number is 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Sean writes, Tucker had a good interview with Alex Jones yesterday. Matt writes, Democrats have foolishly allowed the socialists to take over their party. Just because you claim to be a democratic socialist doesn't make them any less socialist nor any more democratic. Well, I mean, but the theory is here, like the socialism can be done, and this is how it ultimately ends up, with a very heavy hand of government, like authoritarian socialism. Democratic socialism implies there's elections and there's voting, and the free will of the people determine the direction of this socialist democracy. It's Western European. It's post-World War II. It's where government plays a bigger role in your life. However, in the United States, we have a Bill of Rights, we have a Constitution, we have a lot of limits and checks on government to keep them from really being able to create a system that's more that reflects France or Sweden or wherever. We have private property rights. We have a lot of things that the government cannot do that they can do in these European countries. So trying to achieve like a socialist democracy like the Europeans have is something that it may not be possible. We were lucky to have our founding fathers, but like we've resisted this. Probably the biggest advancement of that came in the last century with Franklin Roosevelt in the throes of the Great Depression and the New Deal. And just there were a lot of weird sort of ideological ideas going on in the world at the time. And you think about like how fascism was taking over a lot of private industry and just putting government was just putting people to work. Very Keynesian economics were taking over. The CCC, all of these government projects, national parks, and, you know, well, there was no private sector that was really creating the opportunity for, you know, people to have jobs and livelihoods. The government just said, we're going to come in and we're just going to do it. And we're going to put you to work. That was a much different time back then. You didn't have all these different requirements. But they just put people to work. But we never got to a full-blown socialism, even in the worst of times, the worst of economic conditions. And I don't think we're quite there yet. This is just like one of these things that sounds like a good idea to a lot of people. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.